Welcome to the New Fat Endurance Podcast. I guess we're a special edition. We're here in a 10 in Kenya. I'm joined by Robert Foster.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
How are your diagonal breaths?
Getting more diagonal by the day, to be honest with you.
Our third time here in this just unbelievable place. If you're watching the video version, you can see the view that we have behind us here at our hotel. It's called Curio View. Shout out to Curio View. And yeah, we're back, third time. Should we talk a little bit about being back here, first of all, before we go into today's topic?
Yeah, this is the shortest trip we've had, I think. We came here in 2021 and have been putting ourselves in the bin for the last 3 years. So we looked at our schedules this year and we thought, should we go back? And we thought, abso-bloody-lutely. Because no matter what we do, I think we learn so much here. And I was saying to somebody on the WhatsApp the other day, it's the little snippets that you don't expect. Like you just take it all in and you suddenly hit by this, not a big moment, but just like, oh, that's good. Why don't we do that? Or that's good. How can I adapt that to people who we coach? And then we also get to experience this place for running, which is unbelievable.
Yeah. I think the experience side of it is what certainly brings me back each time. And we've had a few already just off the top of my head. One was watching the New York Marathon on Sunday with Renato Canova, which is just out of this world, isn't it?
Yeah, if you Google Renato Canova, you'll see what a big deal he is in athletics and marathon run coaching. He's just like a godfather of Italian marathoning.
Yeah, and then there was the run on Monday with St. Patrick's group where we hit the forest. And it's such a quiet, dampened down area because obviously the forest absorbs all the noise. But the way you just felt and listened to their rhythm, because it was so quiet everywhere else, you just zoned in on what they were doing. And I mean, you stayed on with them a lot longer than I did. But just to hang on the back there for whatever it was, 1 or 2 Ks while they're in the forest, it just made me really reflect and go, this is something that people dream of. Like, they rarely do they get to be in this position. And that actually carried on with me the whole day yesterday. That was yesterday, Monday. Even sat here watching the colobus monkeys in the trees in the afternoon. I just thought, yeah, what an amazing, well, I guess, privilege it is to be here and watch it and be part of it and like share it with you guys as well.
Yeah, that run was something else. You just get lost in it. And it's the first time for a while actually that I felt a rhythm, because I know only like I think I stuck with them for around about 11k, and they were going 4:30s. This is up and down, folks. This is like high and low and left and right and like slippy and then lots of tree roots, but the way they glided over those, and this is their easy run as well, the way they just sort of floated, and that I think I chimed in for about 30 seconds total time, but it felt amazing. And it was a privilege, an absolute privilege.
Yeah. This morning we were at Fartaleka, 1:01 by 20. It's actually the first session we ever did in 2021, wasn't it?
Yeah, we just exposed ourselves to the worst of it.
And I think it's what we do well. We put ourselves right in the thick of it. We don't take ourselves too seriously. And we're just there with an open mind and open legs to just work, we've been around other runners here and they're all a little bit precious with what they're doing and their program, as they call it. We're not. We show up, we know we're going to get everything absolutely handed to us, but we're here for different reasons, I guess, other than to improve our running.
Yeah, I think that if you're a recreational runner like we are, I think to come here and have anything apart from the best time and loads of fun is a fundamental error. Because that's what it should be, right? It should always come back to that fun element, and putting yourself in the thick of it when you know you're going to get an absolutely spanking is part of that fun, but being open to it. So not precious about your legs, not precious about your perceived ability, but precious about the fact that you want to hold on to every moment and experience it all.
Yeah, and we have definitely laughed every day. Probably
more, too much.
More laughing than not. So, mate, one thing I've felt every day being here is being at a certain threshold. Nothing's easy here. And normally you would take at least up to 10 days of acclimatization, which might actually even be a walk for like 1 to 2 days before you start easy jogging.
Yeah.
We never do that. We come in and just go full gas for the reasons we've just explained. And I thought this was a great time to record this show that we're going to do now on the topic on thresholds, because here we are hitting a threshold every day, but actually it might not be what people would traditionally think as what a threshold is. That's due to the altitude. It's due to probably the fatigue we have in our legs. And I thought it was actually a good time to get you on to chat about how you view thresholds, what you think about them, how you maybe measure them, look at them, and really fit them into people's and your own training. Because there's a very scientific way of looking at thresholds, but there's also a very RPE way of looking at it as well.
Yeah, I think, well, yeah, we have been at threshold pretty much all the time. Various thresholds, but lots of them, like threshold with each other, threshold out running, threshold with transit time and the time it takes for things to happen. I think the word threshold is thrown about a lot. From a scientific perspective, it's great for us as a coach to understand what, say, a lactate threshold on a bike is compared to a run, what your critical threshold or your critical power or your marathon threshold is, your half marathon threshold, LT1, LT2, lactate threshold 1, lactate threshold 2, or TIM 0.1, TIM 0.2. These are all metrics that mark a physiological change in the body or a level at which you cannot go over without something happening. So I think that's the first thing to understand, is that these are physiological determinants of your performance. So if you're a marathon runner, you're looking for your marathon threshold, really. Not your marathon pace, not your marathon whatever, it's your marathon threshold. Mm. And that can be anything. And that depends on how much training you've had, how much your training type you've been doing. And then if you go on a bike and you want to do the best 20 minutes of your life, that's called your FTP, or your functional threshold power for 20 minutes, which is then extended over an hour. So I think it's these, for a coach sitting behind the screen and then programming that out, we know what these mean. So aero benchmarks we have in our Training Peaks library, like steady state benchmarks we have, that's the same, basically the same thing, sweet spot benchmarks. And these are all to give us an idea on what the stimulus that we're wanting to improve is actually happening. So take your, if you work for 6 weeks on your sweet spot, which is like 88 to 92% of FTP, and over a 6 week period, you want to see that that's improving. You then do that at the start and the end, and then you know your sweet spot threshold has improved. Or same with the 20 minute.
Yeah.
But I think it's for who we are coaching, and also for actually anybody, for a professional, and you hear a lot about how do the effort feel they're at a threshold, but then they never relate that to a number. It's a sensation in your legs. It's a feeling of this is my critical capacity for this effort, and that comes with experience and repeatability of that threshold effort. So if you were to do a marathon, you'd train a lot at what your marathon threshold would be to get a sense of how that feels. Usually that comes without looking at a number initially, and it's an RPE base, and that's in tune to your body. Mm-hmm. And then from there you get to reflect on it in terms of numbers, and then from numbers you get to look at progress. But it always should come back to that initial feeling of like, what RPE is that? And being educated enough and also aware enough of your body to know what a 2 or 3 RPE is compared to a 7. I think that's, for me, RPE and a sensation of feeling initially is the foundation of what is then built out a threshold. Because if you say to an amateur runner, go and run what your threshold is for an hour, it means nothing to them. And if they've got a limited experience of athleticism or athletics in any form, again, they have no idea what that feels like. So you send them out in one run and they say, oh, that was definitely my max. Send them out for a second run, totally different numbers in terms of a speed. And they say, oh, that was my max as well. So what is it actually telling you? The data tells you nothing initially. It just tells you that they're trying to figure it out. Mm. 6 months down the line, when you use it as like a comparative, then it starts to tell you stuff.
Yeah. I think it also plays, that way of looking at it plays into the day-to-day variance of how you feel in terms of fatigue, stress, life stress, all of those elements to it as well. So that I think it's important to understand your threshold. Let's say let's talk about running, as we're here in the home of running. Let's say your threshold pace is 4 minutes per K. that was recorded at the time of the test that you did on that particular day.
Yeah.
In that particular fitness level that you were and freshness that you were. So we always, and it allows this within the zoning system, if we look at zone four being your threshold, you've got plus or minus probably 5 seconds per kilometer around that. And I think that's also an important thing to understand as well, is like you're saying with RPE, if on a threshold test, let's say it's a 20-minute test for running, or no, let's go with 10K for running, 4 minutes per K is your threshold, so 40-minute effort. If that was a 10 out of 10 on that day for you over that 40-minute effort, and you tried to give that 10 out of 10 the next day, your pace would be slower.
Yeah.
So you've got to be cool with that threshold slipping and sliding a little bit. And that's where probably we come in a bit more as coaches, to be able to prescribe the right sessions based around the right zoning systems, which is based around the threshold. But your 10 out of 10 on the race day will be a lot different to your 10 out of 10 pace-wise on the following day. And that is down to the athlete understanding what has actually happened to them and what's gone on. And that's something that we've definitely feel here, is like day one, we're running reps around the track. Like day three, our legs feel absolutely cooked, but it still feels just as hard, even though our pace is so much different.
Yeah, for sure. And also, if you look at it, if you're consistently running, say, 330s for a K, and then you come here and it feels exactly the same and you're running 350s, that's a big old bright light on the fact that it feels the same, but the pace is totally different. So cumulative fatigue or a limiting factor, such as stress, outside life, lack of sleep, or just a huge backlog of training that you've done before, will affect it. And then also going into a race, yes, you will feel different, not necessarily the next day, but the days preceding it, your paces might not be bang on, because if it's a big competition, if it's a big event for you, you probably will be at the peak, so you're cooked until you need to back off to allow yourself to run faster than that, to allow adaptation to take place.
Yeah. So heart rate, where does that come into thresholds?
for the run, it's a guiding light, right? So threshold heart rate is actually quite a reliable figure.
Okay.
I think, anyway. So it's also a measure of fatigue, and it's a expression of what the body's going through at that time. So if you run at threshold heart rate for 40 minutes, the only thing that we need to worry about there is if the heart rate is being tampered with by something that's preceded it. So a lot of lack of sleep, for example, so it can't reach as high, like cumulative fatigue. But it is quite a good guideline. Or heat, for example, that really messes it up.
Yeah.
So those considerations need to be taken into account. But as a generic thing of, am I working at the threshold? Is my heart rate here? Yes. Then we can sort of rely on that if the environment is consistent and we know what we're doing.
Yeah.
It's also a good comparative to power.
Yeah.
Or pace, for example. So if you train 4 weeks at a threshold heart rate, and then you look at your power before and after, so your heart rate should stay the same. It's quite consistent, but your power will go up if done correctly.
Yeah, you'd hope so.
You'd hope so.
Yeah. Heart rate's a tricky one. I think you need a lot of data for heart rate to make use of it. But I think once you do get probably, say, even 8 to 10 months worth of heart rate data, probably when you've gone through the different cycles of training and you've collected up a good idea of what your heart rate sits around roughly, let's say for marathon pace work, for half marathon pace work, you can then start to utilize that number in different environments. So like here, for example, we're at 2,300 meters high altitude. My heart rate is actually capping out at about 166, which for me, normally at running, it's like 175 would be like a hard, hard effort. Here, I can only push to 166. And that could be probably not because we're a lack of sleep, because we're getting a lot of sleep, but simply just being at altitude and not having enough oxygen to deliver to the working muscle to actually need my heart rate to go higher. The sort of reduction in putting oxygen into my lungs is what's actually capping me there. It could be that my legs are cooked and they can't, again, push to that point where they need greater amount of oxygen, which would increase heart rate. But it's a good sign to me that I know, right, this feels like an 8 out of 10 RPE. My pace is, for altitude, definitely at a 8 out of 10 RPE. but my heart rate's 10 beats under what it normally would be. However, I know that my resting heart rate's 10 beats higher than it normally would be because of the environment that we're in. So I know that heart rate is actually probably not so accurate here. And again, when you're into Dubai in summertime, same, and you're running at 35 degrees temperature, your heart rate actually is probably going to be 10 beats higher than what you'd like it to see, because it's affected so much by your body. Simply before you start the run, your body is already working to a point to keep you cool before you've even started running. And same here, your body's already working to deliver oxygen to the muscles, because it's got less pressure forcing oxygen into the lungs to deliver to the muscles. So the whole number is just skewed.
It's variant, yeah, and it's environmentally affected.
Which brings it all back to feeling.
Feel. See what we're getting at here, folks.
Yeah, and I think you can even feel it with, let's say, cadence as well. And I felt it this morning on this morning's run, running down a hill. I felt to the point where my legs were like, right, if you go any faster now, you're either going to trip or fall. Your muscles can't handle, or my muscles couldn't handle going any quicker with my leg speed. So I was like, oh, I've reached my like RPM threshold.
RPM threshold.
And it made me think, because I knew we were recording this today, I was like, that's it. We're there, we're RPM thresholding down a hill. And it's always, I see it as just this red line that's like, go above that red line and you are in very high risk of danger. Stay underneath that red line and you're going to be okay. But the more fatigued you get, the more the red line just drops.
Yeah, yes, there is a threshold for everything.
Like I said at the start.
Yeah, there is literally a threshold for everything. Yeah. And there's a variance within that threshold for different length of activity. So you could maintain maybe on a track 200 RPM for a 400. But anything past that 400, your body doesn't have the capability to maintain it. So that's your 400 meter cadence threshold.
Yeah.
Whereas for like a 1K effort, maybe it's 180. And then for a marathon, it's, well, hopefully 180, but more often than not, drops to 170, 175.
Yeah.
So it's, again, it's event dependent as well, and like distance or time dependent.
Yeah.
I think that's important to stress for me as well. When you're coaching somebody to do a marathon, it's their 7 out of 10 marathon effort as opposed to a 7 out all out of, it's hard to get your head around.
Yeah.
Because that takes a lot of coaching and a lot of awareness of what a 7 out of 10 should feel like on a marathon, as opposed to fresh out the bat doing a 1K effort. It's totally, again.
I like to put it in the view of point of, right, we want this run to be a 6 out of 10, let's say for your marathon pace. So, but give it, say, to them for 16K. At the end of the 16K, if you've run it out a 6 out of 10, you should feel like you could go on and run another 16K. So finish and feeling like, oh yeah, I could do another. If we said 16K, 10 out of 10, you should get to the end of that 16K and you cannot take another step.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how I like to simplify it. Because, yeah, 10 out of 10, you might sprint out for the first 100 meters, completely gas yourself, and then you're done. That is also 10 out of 10.
That's 10 out of 10 for that 100 meters.
For that 100 meters, but it's not specific to the 16K that is in your training program. So I think that's a nice way of looking at it, is always be specific to actually what the, like you said, the distance of the event is, and then work backwards from there.
Yeah.
And that also can be taken from doing more races, like 5, 10Ks.
It's experience, right?
Yeah.
It's finding that threshold. It's like the name of this podcast. If you don't, so that as also as a coach, when you put somebody into that situation and they go a bit overzealous in that first half, as say a 40-minute effort, you're not going to berate them. You're not going to tell them off, because it's a learning experience to find where that limit is. That line is, unless you've had a lot of experience at that line and know how it feels, then you have no clue what you're doing. So you need to build up a schema of previous information. So races, lots of thresholds. If you're going to do threshold, lots of marathon 6 out of 10, practice. So then regardless of what the power, the heart rate or the pace is saying, you can rely back on that number. It's like when you hear a professional athlete for a marathon runner say, I want to do a good race.
Mm.
They're talking about they want to run at threshold. They want to run as fast as they can over a marathon. They're talking about their marathon critical power, or their marathon threshold pace.
Yeah.
And it's as simple as that, because they're relying then on all the hours and hours of training that goes into that to know what that pace feels like to execute it.
Yeah. Yeah. We saw a good example of that on Sunday, didn't we, at the New York Marathon, is the men's, the bloke just ran his best race.
Literally.
And no one could stick with him.
No.
But he worked. You could see he was on his threshold from kilometre one.
Yeah.
He was just, I'm running this race how I know I can. And if you're with me, great. If you're not, see you later. The women's was a whole different tactic of race.
At
some points, they slowed the pace down by like 15 seconds per K within going into the last 30K. Then with, was it 5K to go, the first kick came. And then you saw what they're like working at threshold.
The 5K threshold, right?
Threshold. But that, I think that's a great example of what you mean by when pros say, I want to run my best race versus I want to win the race.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, the women's was literally, because New York's notorious for just, it's a prize pot, it's a thing to get, because it's a major, and it's not necessarily quick, so you're not going to be able to execute, well, usually that perfect run. So like Berlin is much better for that, because that's much more just flat line all the way through.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's very interesting. If you haven't watched that, go and watch that, because that is a banging example of 5K threshold.
Yeah.
And a final 200 meter kick up a hill.
I'm very aware we've talked a lot about running, but I think this also definitely applies to your triathlon training as well and your cycling training.
Yeah.
Trail running, you're going to have thresholds going up a hill.
Yeah.
Threshold on terrain, threshold of how much your feet can take in terms of like blisters, things like that.
Yeah.
You know, and understanding what the feeling is. Okay, that's a hot point. Now I know I've got another, let's say 15 minutes before that becomes a full on blister. So you know, right, I need to stop now. Otherwise I'm going to go beyond that threshold of being able to save that blister.
Yeah.
Within triathlon, you've got the swim.
Which is mainly RPE, right?
It's fully RPE, really, if you're doing it properly, because no one should be looking at their watch while swimming.
Goggles, isn't it?
Oh yeah, those stupid goggles. Form. Yeah, I think that's a great, and also, yeah, I've had clients ask me about those goggles, and I just think, if you do wear those,
it's a distraction.
It's a big distraction, but you're also taking away what actually is the biggest gain of swimming, which is feeling the water and your body position in the water. Because 100% you put those goggles on, you're going to be looking at the clock the whole time. So yeah, for in a swim race, the thresholds, again, thinking back to outside the box with terms of thresholds, like if you get a little bit of water in your goggles, how much can you further can you go before that water becomes too much?
What's
and then you
have
to turn
level?
On your back. What's the tolerance of it? So it all pulls back to tolerances, I guess. It should be called a tolerance threshold.
Yeah.
Really.
What can you tolerate?
Yeah.
In a trail run
before
going
it starts
down a
hill. Negatively affecting you.
Yeah. How efficient can you make your running downhill before you start in like jacking your hips so you can't go uphill again?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very interesting.
Yeah. And the best in the game all know exactly what it feels like and when they're feeling good. When they can work on that line, and when they're not feeling so good, they know that line, they get up to that line a lot faster, so they learn to back off a little bit earlier.
Much quicker before it bites them.
Before it bites them. And I think that's another key point to racing, certainly triathlon, is you've got to be cool with people overtaking you if you know that you're at a point where you can't go any harder without blowing up.
Well, you're great at this. You've got a real good tolerance on the bike to knowing what that level is.
Yeah.
And you'll say, you often, Tom always tells me how you, in his little head, he ticks off saying, I'll catch you later, pal. I'll catch you later. Because it's true. And then you do. You eat up the ground then because you've judged that bike perfectly. More often than not, you hear somebody say, oh, I overspent on the bike because they get excited and start racing. When you look at a triathlon, it's not a race.
Yeah.
Well, it's not a race, especially long course. When it's non-draft, it's not a race against anybody else.
No.
It's only you judging your tolerance or your threshold perfectly so you can level it and then pick it up at the end.
Yeah. Definitely a game of thresholds, and like you said, not working to other people's thresholds, because you actually don't know anyone else's data, really.
No, you have no idea how hard they're working.
Especially bringing into the point of you don't know how they're feeling on the day and how you might be feeling on the day as well. And it's a nice feeling knowing that you're sitting just underneath that threshold line. And again, on a triathlon, your bike leg, the threshold is actually lower than what you think your bike threshold would be, because you've got a half or a marathon to run.
Yeah.
Or 10k or whatever it is distance that you're in. So we've even got 70.3 bike thresholds, Ironman bike thresholds, and this is for people listening and wondering what that is. That's basically your race power or your race numbers are your thresholds for that particular race. It's not your FTP, it's not your functional threshold power, but this is what we're talking about today, is how you're linking thresholds across the board with everything, so that if all your data screens turned off all at once, you'd know exactly what it feels like to hold what you want to.
And that's a good tip if you want to do an FTP for the first time, or 17th time later, or an 8-minute best effort on the bike.
Yeah.
You cover your screen and you go off how it feels, because the limited data means you have to dial that more into how that actually feels. What am I doing? What's my body doing? What are my hips saying? What are my glutes firing? Is my back twisting too much? So then you get another threshold.
Yeah.
It's like on bike form, am I hit my threshold or tolerance to this power? And is my form giving way? Is my back starting to roll a little bit, which is undoubtedly going to affect me later on in the bike race or in the triathlon and the run?
Yeah.
So you're not going to be able to hold your critical cadence because your back's cooked.
Yeah. Yeah. Thresholds amongst life. Amazing.
We hit our threshold on day one at the track, our nose burning threshold.
Yeah,
but we're not experienced enough yet, apparently, even though we live in Dubai.
We went beyond our sun threshold.
We stepped right over it.
Yeah, and again, that's experience, right? I think being here helps you understand how the best runners in the world do come from here. And a lot of it does come down to, and today was a nice reminder for me, there's some absolute guns at the start of the fartlek, and not all of them finish.
No.
And that's because they know when they're trying to push beyond what they want to achieve, say in the session within the week, the bigger week, or maybe they've had like 3 big weeks leading up into this, and they're not too egotistical to just crack on and go beyond that threshold and injure themselves or, you know, cause some damage within their training. So let's say they don't recover in time tomorrow for whatever they have tomorrow, and they just stop and have a walk, don't they?
Have a walk and a chat, yeah. That's really interesting to see, because normally we're like, oh, that's rubbish. Why are you not finishing the session? Because the session isn't getting or giving what they need.
What they need, yeah.
So they can't hit that 230 pace on gravelly roads on the red carpet.
Yeah.
So it's useless.
I was, sounds terrible, I was scouting the girls at the back, seeing who was limping, which ones I could keep up with. And I built into it. I was right at the back at the start. And then I went past diagonals, which... yeah, I was hoping for. He was already at diagonal breath limit, his threshold.
45 diagonal breaths a minute, apparently.
And then I caught a group of girls who, they were just absolutely hammering each other. And you could hear it in their breath. They were like really short breath when they were working. But then in between, they were just recovering so fast. And I thought, wow, I wonder if these guys are going to be able to do all of these reps, because it was 20 reps. So 20 times 1 minute on, 1 minute off. But they just knew exactly the right sort of float jogging pace to recover in that 1 minute,
yeah,
to get their breath back, to then work just as hard again in the next minute. And almost within 10 to 15 seconds of the next on rep, their breathing was back to that like really short, limited breath. But they knew, okay, just hold on for 45 seconds.
Because they can get back to it,
yeah,
and recover from it. Yeah, which we couldn't. Well, you could. You built into it. I didn't.
I built into it, yeah.
I went out with a bang. And
I knew my thresholds.
I knew my thresholds until I didn't, until my recovery had to take a big, big step back so I could get that 15 seconds to get my breath under control.
Mm.
And then I was good to accelerate again and be happy with it.
Your hamster heart.
You know we're talking about your heart rate. Yeah. I'm hitting the same heart rate. 200 beats a minute at track.
Yeah, I'm nowhere near that.
Absolutely disgusting. My legs are kind of like 30-40 pace. It's horrible.
Excellent. What would be your threshold to dealing with this view every day, mate?
It's high. I think I can live with this.
We've had a lot of rain actually here. My threshold of rain is probably...
It's low ebb. The threshold of mist in the morning as well. Gorillas, yeah, running up the track.
Yeah.
Nah, it's beautiful here. And... yeah, you could spend a good couple months out here just ending yourself day after day.
Day after day.
Threshold actually lasts for 3 years.
Yeah. You have Valencia coming up.
Correct,
Valencia,
yeah.
Marathon.
The marathon.
Last time we were here, you were working towards Beirut.
And I got horribly sick after this trip.
Funnily enough. Yeah, we've done a little bit different this time, haven't we? We've only run once a day.
No double days and feel better for it.
Do you feel better for it?
Yeah, I do actually. I think you just said it at the start of the show. usually if you come here in the first 3 or 4 days, you're taking walks in the evenings or in the mornings to get used to it.
Yeah.
So our recovery shakeouts are actually high-end aerobic low tempo. So we're doing threshold in the morning or VO2 and then cooking ourselves in the evening. So it's a lot. I think it's a lot better for recovery because our bodies are working hard, really hard as well, to recover.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah, Valencia should be fun. Came, what, back from Great North Run, got like a 40-second PB or something there. So that was good. That was a good confidence booster, seeing as I went in after travelling back from London the day before.
Mm.
But I've got extra motivation this year.
Extra motivation?
Extra motivation, mate.
What is it?
I can't tell you that.
I know what it is.
Yes, you do. Yeah, it's gonna be fun. I'm actually really excited for it.
Yeah, which, I don't know, maybe I was speaking out of turn for you here, but I think you felt a little bit of pressure for Beirut, probably from yourself.
Myself, 100% myself.
Yeah. I remember you saying what you wanted in your times, and I thought, oh, does he believe that? Is that what he thinks he can, or wants to, would like to achieve? Whereas now I think you're giving yourself the best opportunity to run your best race in Valencia, which is what
threshold. We talked about. I've practiced threshold a lot. I've practiced marathon threshold a lot. I've read loads of people, like professional runners, things, and that's the whole want to run a good race. And I think it comes down to it. That's all you can do. So if you can finish the run and you can say, I ran a really good race for me, then the time is irrelevant. It doesn't matter, because you need to execute what you are capable of, and that capability can sit me what between like 230, 235, 240, big range.
Yeah.
But if I run my best race, because Valencia's flat, it's perfect temperature, it's got a good caliber of runner, so you can get carried quite a lot.
Sea level.
Then I can cross line and be happy.
I love that. I think that's a nice reminder, and reminds me of just chatting with Tariq Al-Jabi, long time member of Inner Fight Endurance. He just ran New York, which was a bucket list race for him. And I think he won't mind me saying, a couple of weeks before, he started to really panic with it, which is not uncommon in a marathon or a long distance event. And in this part of the world, there's been a lot of turbulence going on.
Mm.
And that's not probably hidden from any of us, you know, living in the region. But we said, right, well then, forget it as a marathon with a time, let's make it a Tariq marathon.
Yeah.
And it's just what we chat about now. He just sent me a message saying that he just high-fived as many people along the way. He stopped and talked to people if at water stations. He stopped and chatted to his wife and gave her a kiss because she traveled all the way to support him. And he just said it felt the best race he's ever done.
Yeah.
Because he made it his own. Like we say, no one's going to put your marathon time on your gravestone.
No. And that was his marathon threshold. How many high fives can he give out in 42.2 kilometers?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. It's the same for all our guys in New York, actually. They all just went in with a really good mindset.
Yeah.
Kind of not under pressure of the clock. And if you get everything right, the clock will come good. You know, I can really vouch for that. That if you get everything else right around it, your thresholds for your work, your thresholds for what you can tolerate in training, your thresholds around your friendships, your marriage, the clock will look after itself. Don't worry about that. And I think that's where you're sitting pretty for Valencia, mate. And you're taking quite a crew with you as well, right?
Yeah, got a good little crew going across, all spread out. We've got some dinners planned, it should be decent, and then we've got karaoke after. So what's our threshold to out-of-tune singing?
Oh, it's going to be pretty low, I'd imagine.
Yeah, very low after a marathon.
The more you drink, the higher your threshold can get.
Yeah. It's a perfect correlate. No, it's going to be a good crack. I think, yeah, thresholds is, it's an interesting one because it's all-encompassing. But it's absolutely within your control.
Yeah, it is. Well, mate, from the home of champions, Iten, Kenya, thank you very much for coming on the show. And we'll get you back on post-Valencia to debrief your threshold for karaoke.
Yes, I can give you some renditions later as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much for listening.